I knew Charlie Parker. He had a jam session one day in Kansas City. We almost blew the roof off the place, just the two saxophones. We played there from 2 in the morning till about 2 that next day. When people were having lunch, we thought they were having breakfast.
He had just gotten back after living for 22 years in Paris, and his latest album had just won a Grammy. I'm Fred Macy, and this is The Jazz Scene, dedicated to the preservation, promotion, and appreciation of jazz, America's classical music. His name was Jean-Baptiste Delanoy Jacquet, a passionate and innovative jazz tenor saxophonist, best remembered for his 1942 solo with the Lionel Hampton Band on Flyin' Home, introducing a sound later recognized as the first R&B sax solo ever to be recorded, even forming the basis for the saxophone stylings of early rock and roll. I remember when Illinois called. I picked up the phone and heard a really friendly voice that pulled you in, just like the way he played his horn.
Illinois, you were born in Louisiana.
That's right.
Where the heck did you get a name, Illinois?
Illinois is Indian. My mother was from an Indian tribe, and that was a name given to me in memory of the heritage of my mother.
Okay, so that was a christened name then.
Right. It's a French name. The whole name, I'll give it to you. It's Jean-Baptiste Illinois Jacquet. That's my full christened name.
Oui. Your dad was a bass player, from what I understand, and you started actually playing R&B. When did you switch to jazz and why?
Well, I've always been a jazz musician. I don't know where they get these titles from, but you can't stop people from giving you titles. They seem to do that all through people's careers. We were born playing jazz music. Our grandfather was a jazz musician. He played with Pop Celestine in New Orleans before they left New Orleans with this music. And then my father picked the bass up, and when we were small, I had three brothers, and we all played music, and I danced in front of my father's big band, and my other three brothers played instruments. Russell played trumpet, Lenton played drums, and Julius, my oldest brother, played saxophone. So I've heard the saxophones all my life, and in the high school, I was able to pick up a saxophone. That was one of the graduates that left his instrument to be flat soprano.
You're known for your incredible driving style. It's said that back in the 40s, you could whip a crowd into a frenzy with your saxophone, much like the rock and roll concerts of today. And you've got a special high note technique. Tell us about it a little bit.
When you have a lot of things in you, and you own a stage, and I've been on the stage ever since I was 3. I was on the stage at the Philharmonic Auditorium in 1944, and I had been with Lionel Hampton and made Flyin' Home, which was one of the most exciting things in the history of jazz. On that record, Flyin' Home, I took that solo, and then I had a chance to play in jazz at the Philharmonic Auditorium, the first live concert for jazz at the Philharmonic, and the place was packed and jammed, and we had people like the late Nat King Cole with piano, and Les Paul with guitar. And so when I got out there and we started playing, and the music got kind of in a groove, and started playing, a lot of things came out of me, and the audience was picking it up, and the more they feared me, the more I feared them, and I just went up and I went out into the stratosphere on this horn, and you never know, nothing is planned. Had no idea that that was being recorded. And that record turned out to be the Philharmonic Blues Part 2, which launched jazz at the Philharmonic and made it a major attraction and was the biggest thing out there in jazz around the world.
So you're saying it just started purely by accident?
Yes. What's in you, you don't know what's going to come out of you. And if you've been on the stage as long as I have as a child, and you're on stage now, and you're in your early 20s, and that crowd is out there, and that King Cole's at the piano, he's feeding you, and you hear him, and you hear this soul.
They get you cooking.
Yeah, and you hear all this, and you hear those people out there responding to what you're doing, and so you build as you go, and not just, this house just built up into the Empire State Building.
What was the most exciting moment of your life? Would you say that was it, or would you pick another?
Well, I would say when I got a call from Count Basie after making the picture Jamming the Blues, that was a jazz short that we made with Lester Young, and he said he wanted to meet me and wanted to talk to me. How would I like to join his band? But that was an excited moment because that was the band that I idolized. That was the band which made me take notice that I had to be a musician and I wanted to be in a band like that one day. I heard him in my senior year in Houston, Texas.
So actually you were the forerunner of Eddie Lockjaw Davis in that band.
Yeah. I was in there a little early. I think Lucky Thompson was before me. It was fresh. It was easy to adapt to because that's the way, the direction I wanted to go in music. And
well, his driving style and your driving style really went together.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And he was very pleased, and that made it much easier for me to continue to what I was doing because it was a great encouragement from Count Basie to have that encouragement from a leader like that. It meant a lot to a young man.
Illinois, If you had to look back on that career and change anything, what would you change?
Not one damn thing. It was a spiritual journey, and it's only one person can really feel what really happened. That's me, and I would cling on to that because I think God was with me all the way, and he's still with me. I ask him for a lot of things, and I receive the things that I ask for, and that's a personal thing that I always cherish.
When you were with that Hampton band, just to drop back for a second, you had a somewhat what was referred to as a dubious reputation as an exhibitionist. You want to talk about that?
I was an alto player, alto saxophone. And I knew Charlie Parker in 1939. I met him in Kansas City. And he and I used to have jam sessions. Yeah, we had a jam session one day in Kansas City until we almost blew the roof off the place, just the two saxophones. We played there from 2 in the morning till about 2:15 the next day. When people were having lunch, we thought they were having breakfast.
You and the Bird.
Yeah. Bird was just overwhelmed about my playing on the alto, and I was likewise with what he was doing. And we just locked horns together before we left our native hometown. You know?
Ooh, I'd love to have heard
when
that.
When I joined Hampton Band, he switched me from the alto saxophone to the tenor saxophone. That's how I started playing the tenor.
I see.
It was Ron Hampton said if I wanted to join his band and get to New York and get where everything was happening, I would have to switch, and he would make me a feature saxophone player in his band, providing if I would switch from the alto saxophone to the tenor. And that's what I did.
And you're still playing now, and you've just made that new album on Atlantic, Jacquette's Got It, and you do. Want to talk a little about the album?
The album, it was a very, very tough mission to record with big band after not making recordings for the past 19 to 20 years in the United States, although I've made records in Europe, but not here. And so I knew that I had to come up with something that was going to be dominating into what sits the system the way it is today. And I was very satisfied the way I made this recording. There was no one interference with me. They put me in the studio and said, go ahead on and do your thing. And
it's up for a Grammy. You must have.
Thank you.
Where does Illinois Jacquette go from here? Are you looking to record some more, do some live dates, looking at retirement, heaven forbid, or what?
A jazz musician can't retire because when you retire, you're through. And I intend to continue to make records. I intend to make jazz concerts and play in good clubs that people understand the jazz music and try to teach young people how to stay off of dope or whatever that I can contribute to humanity, whatever I can do to help America be strong and our young people. And I see they need that help.
Illinois, it's been not just a pleasure, it's been a privilege. Thank you so very much.
Well, I want to wish your station the best of luck anytime that you want to call me or want me to come on the station and be interviewed with you or talk about some of the things in my experience, I'll be delighted. And I'll be listening to you.
Illinois' final performance was on July 16, 2004, at Lincoln Center in New York City. After a celebrated career, he died at his home in Queens, New York, 6 days later of a heart attack on July 22, 2004. Illinois was 84. I want to thank you for spending some time with us here at the Mark of Jazz, and I hope you've enjoyed being here as much as I've enjoyed your company. If you'd like to hear something special, or want to talk about the kinds of things you like best, just leave me a comment here at the Jazz Scene, or on the website itself, markofjazz.com. And by the way, until next time, remember the sage advice of Miles Davis, who said, "Don't play what's there, play what's not there."